I remember correctly, so you live in California now. You moved to California.
Yeah.
And but you would spend summers here.
In Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri, right?
My grandparents were like my surrogate parents, because my father died when I was very young, and my mother was kind of trying to figure out what she was going to do, so I was with them for a little while, and then in Richill, and yeah, so and then over the years, they were just like my foundation was there with them every summer, every winter break, every everything, so great people, no longer alive, but mm-hmm. I have them in here, and you know, so.
Well, how did you find, like, I mean, you know, you're sort of an outsider because, you know, you don't live here anymore, but, you know, speaking with all these women, I'm sure that, like, you somehow had that, like, you know, I know your situation. I've known people like you.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I know, I don't know, you know, it's the way probably in 10 years from now you'll feel about it. You know, I mean, you know where you came from, you know what, you know, you may not know that there's a TGIF right now, but there's still that connection and that appreciation. And I think, you know, I have a love in many ways for Missouri, and then sadness when I see what is happening there, and a responsibility as a filmmaker to tell a story that I'm not seeing, you know, told. So, yeah, I
think for me, you know, it's so odd because, you know, I went to Planned Parenthood when I was in college in Columbia. You know, that's where I had all my doctor's visits. When I lived in Springfield, that's where I went. I went to the Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And I took all of that for granted, I think. And, you know, and I never had to deal with anybody outside protesting. Like, that, what, I mean, I guess that was like 15 years ago, but that, it just wasn't a thing. And
yeah.
And I remember, it wasn't necessarily something you would, like, tell everybody, but if you mentioned Planned Parenthood to someone, it wasn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it was more of just, like, you couldn't really afford to go to, you know, or you didn't have health insurance, so you would go to
yeah.
Planned Parenthood because you could go there.
Yeah.
It's where, you know, anybody could go and get, you know, what they needed.
Yeah.
And to just, I just can't even imagine going to one of these places and having people protest outside. And that's just, it's got to be just very traumatic.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an emotional gauntlet. I mean, I you know, I feel like it's similar to, you know, breaking a strike or, you know, crossing a picket line or something to get health care. And it's kind of outrageous.
Yes. It's like, how did this go backwards?
Well, it's a climate of shame. Like, so if you're going to a place like Columbia, where it's not able to provide abortions right now of any kind, medical or otherwise, you really are going there for contraception, maybe a referral, and it's this climate of, you know, and maybe you shouldn't even be having sex, right? You know, use abstinence, because what, you know, if you're, why are you going there? This is,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, yeah.
It's just, it's such a different sort of, like, culture, and it's really been interesting to, you know, have grown up in, like, a religious atmosphere and one of, like, shame and, you know, not even admitting to anyone that you're Democrat or even you would think that. Like, you just don't even bring it up.
Yeah.
You just, you know, just bear with everything and then
yeah.
come here and have the complete opposite situation.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's a little odd.
There are different bubbles.
Yeah.
Right? Different bubbles. And, you know, I think the less that we can live in our bubbles and more, you know,
right.
is kind of the goal here, particularly, you know, with this film. And, yeah, because I think the coasts may have a different experience and obviously different things are more accessible than what's happening in the middle part of the country, and
mm-hmm.
Missouri specifically.
Well, did you have a, you know, certain clinics that you had thought about going to, you know, that you had worked with? Like, how did you figure out where you were going to go to try to get, you know, interviews with these young women?
Well, there, the focus initially was on abortion stories. So it made sense to go to the one clinic in Missouri that is
appalling that there's only one.
Yeah, one clinic that was providing abortions, and that's the Planned Parenthood in St. Louis. But the Planned Parenthood in St. Louis, you know, there was the undercover video thing that was came down in the course of making the film, and it was very, very hard. That's a big national organization that was under this attack. So it was hard. They were wonderful, but they're very, very concerned about their patients and video cameras. And it ended up that Granite City, just over the Missouri border in Illinois, they were also seeing this wave of women from Missouri once the 72-hour law passed. So it became a good place for any number of reasons to focus and to meet women. And then things kind of organically evolved from there, as it happens with any documentary film. And one thing leads to another. So.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, how did you end up with the, you know, because you have like the Roman numeral structure, like, you know, the.
Yeah.
Like you said, you start out one way and things just sort of happen.
Well, yeah. So in the edit, this film was tricky to edit because it's a collection of stories. It's a chorus of women's stories, and how many is too many and how many is too few. And there was a feeling that there was going to be strength in numbers, that if you just had one or two stories that then could kind of be dismissed or written off as, well, that was a fetal anomaly, or, well, that was a teenager, or that was somebody who was raped, or, you know, well, that's a good abortion, but, you know, all the other abortions are bad abortions. So it's like, okay, no, we've got to tell a lot of stories from a lot of women, from a lot of different perspectives. We looked for kind of ways also to keep an audience watching and make it watchable and have a bit of a narrative thread rather than just the story and then the story and then the story. So Amy was, you know, one of our devices to keep people watching and chronicling her kind of story from beginning to end. And then these chapters, another way of kind of moving from one story to another story. And we hope would be a bit of a good cinematic experience. The edit was tricky.
Well, I know on Rich Hill you worked with Andrew.
Yeah.
I think I remember you talking about how it was just basically the two of you in a lot of it. So how was your experience on this? Because did you have more people with you?
Well, I didn't have a lot more. I mean, I did have camera people with me and camera people. It was either Kamau or Judy with me. So there were two camera people that I worked with, but not at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in general, for me, it's important to keep a very small footprint because otherwise it becomes about the filmmaking process and not about who were there to meet or what's happening. It becomes about us. So I still had a very, very small footprint. I didn't light anything. But definitely worked with other people. I wasn't a one person band on this.
Did you sort of take breaks? Because I'm sure the subject matter had to kind of drain on you personally after a while.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of ground to cover, and we would come back and work with the footage and try to see how it was kind of piecing together. And I think, you know, it did start off with abortion stories, but then it became clear when there was a lot of conversation about options and what are the options and what are the stories of women who choose different options or don't have options available to them. What does that look like? So we wanted to include those stories as well, and it became a kind of a bigger story about facing unplanned pregnancy. But yes, breaks were important. Absolutely. I think no matter what you're working on, that kind of refueling and some home time and with my family is always important in the process of making these films. And then when I go, I can really immerse myself and then you know, go back to my own life. But when I am making films and I am meeting people and going to new places, I do try to really open up to that experience, and it can be exhausting.
Well, there's one scene that I found particularly sort of fascinating, and it seems like it was sort of a happenstance of a girl talking to another girl who was sort of like protesting, and I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was a blonde woman, and she was talking to a longer hair woman, and she. Because she was saying, like, oh, you know, abortions are horrible, and you know, and then the other girl was, you know, completely, like, a very, like, honest and intelligent sort of conversation,
oh, yeah,
actually.
Oh, this was at University of Missouri.
Was that what it was?
Yeah,
I couldn't
yeah,
quite
they're
place
the
where it was.
Student center.
Yes, yes.
At the University
yes.
of Missouri.
Oh, well, that's very...
Yeah, there you go. Very, very close to home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because... The way the camera moved, it seemed as though, like, you almost, like, just caught it. And so I was wondering, like, how that even happened.
Well, we basically did just catch it. I mean, we had spent the morning with Reagan, who is the woman who was putting on this, I don't know what to call it, like a, you know, as a demonstration or, so she... She had planned this demonstration, and we met with her that morning, and then drove with her to the University of Missouri as she's setting up, and then we're just there, and Katie walked by and had this very meaningful debate conversation with Reagan, which, it's one of those moments where you're like, okay, I think that's going to go in the film.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to... I mean, she's very intelligent. I think at the time she didn't... We walked up to her afterwards to sign a release, you know, because and she thought that we were with Reagan, and we had to explain that, no, we're here, we're making this film that had a wider view, and it wasn't a pro-life film necessarily. And so then she was, you know, okay being a part of it, and... but yeah, that was just a moment that we captured in a, yeah, important conversation, ultimately, I think.
Yeah, that would particularly just stood out because you don't see many of those. Like, you know, it's usually a yelling match or it's
yeah.
a man telling a woman, you know, something at a, you know, outside. But to see, you know, two people actually try to reason...
Yeah,
somewhat with each other.
And to give Reagan credit as well, I think her approach, she said that she's fine with that. She's fine with these conversations. She wants to have these conversations. She
mm-hmm.
wants to have this, you know, that's exactly what she was trying to have happen. So, great. I mean, I think that there's no reason that those kinds of conversations shouldn't be happening. That's okay. It's when it's about the... bullying women who have already made a choice and intimidating them and shaming them, like that's, I don't know where to put that. That doesn't, for me, I hope that doesn't happen much more at all, you know?
Right.
That's pretty much not okay, but.
Yeah, and I was just going to ask, like, what about, you know, some of the, because there was a couple of speakers of on the pro-life side, you know, what sort of thing surprised you about them?
Well, I think it was always surprising to me when I learned that, you know, perhaps they'd had abortions themselves and multiple abortions, and that kind of, you know, that was a choice that they made at one point in their lives, and they wanted now to not have other women make that choice, and it just kind of makes things less black and white and more gray, I think, when you really break it down to who's having abortions. And a lot of women are having abortions, pro-life, pro-choice, and, you know, that it's great. You know, you can be pro-life, you can be pro-choice, but at the end of the day, women are going to need and have abortions, and let's have that be safe and accessible.
Yeah, and that, and just, you mean, I think the importance is just getting these stories out there, letting people know that these things are happening.
Right.
It's not something that's just in certain instances, and, you know, there's such a wider view that's going to be taken.
Right. It's, you know, people of all religions and races and, you know, but with the restrictions, it's particularly low-income women who are affected and who then are not able to access the care that they want and then are, you know, largely kept in a low-income status because of not being able to access the care that they want.
Tell me a little bit about the music that you used for it, because you had a composer, right?
Nathan Halpern, who I also worked with on Rich Hill, who I adore, and he's just a wonderful human being. And I think, you know, for the music, we didn't, you know, like Rich Hill, I mean, it was an approach of not wanting to be heavy-handed with it and not wanting to say this is good news or this is bad news, but to really take kind of the opinion out of it, but still to... you know, still to just support the emotion and the individual stories that women were sharing. But not to, you know, not to say this is a bad story or this is a good story or this is someone that we really believe in. This is not, you know, to really have it be more more neutral than that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is that something that was real? I mean, I'm sure that was something that was really important to HBO as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, they, both Sheila Nevins and Sarah Bernstein, have been important collaborators and honestly champions from day one. And without them, I honestly, and I'm not, you know, I would not have been able to make this film. And from an emotional or just, you know, literally I wouldn't have been able to make it, but I think also emotionally, not knowing that they were there supporting the film, believing in the film, believing in the approach, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Do you find yourself, you know, you've done a couple of documentaries, so do you find yourself really thinking of sticking with a documentary, or do you have a narrative bug?
I mean, I love making documentary films. I love the nimbleness that you can have, and especially as a woman filmmaker, you know, the barriers to entry, honestly, are a bit lower with documentaries, and you can pick up a camera, and you can start, and you can make your film, and it... I love the work. I love the doing. And I feel like, you know, my storytelling bug is satisfied by making documentaries. But, you know, I do have a background. My film MFA is in screenwriting. So someday that might be something that I will do on my bucket list. But right now I'm really happy to be making documentaries and hope that I can continue to make more of them.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. Good luck. When does it premiere? Or is it premiered?
It premiered last night.
Last night.
So
oh my gosh.
I'm a little blurry-eyed. That's